This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, and for everyone who wants to know more about their favorite authors. At the bottom of the hour, I have a really fantastic author coming on. You may have heard of his thrillers, which everyone really enjoys. They are among the best-selling thrillers in the world, actually. Now, Ridley Scott is also famous for his children's books. And here, particularly in Florida, Ridley Scott has written books called The Kingdom Keepers. There are 9 in that series, and they are about the characters in Disneyland and Disney World. So it's going to be fun to talk to him about his books. Now, meanwhile, I want to talk about a little bit about some of the emails I've gotten, and I'm so happy when you send me an email and ask me a question either about writing, about agents, about legal questions for the writer's legal eagle, who is going to be on the program next Thursday. That's Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. So just send me an email. It's my email address is patsy.radio@gmail.com. And ask me any question you want about writing and about books. I want to just read a little passage here for you and think about it as I read it. Here it is. The dark brown curls were everywhere. They were a curse and had been for 28 of her 29 years. Okay, now let's read the next one. Dark brunette curls were everywhere. They were a curse and had been for 31 years of my life. Now, which one is real and which one is stolen? Well, it's the first one. The first one was written by a very talented young writer who wrote a romance. It's very cute. And she was very happy when she finished the book and went on to write some more books. And then one day, she discovered that somebody had stolen her book. And the author who stole the book hid behind many, many aliases. So we'll call it the phony author who stole her book, changed the point of view, and just did it in the first person instead of third person. But essentially, the book is the same. The only addition were some sex scenes because the author rightly guessed that they could be a bestseller. And so she published this book under a phony name also and started selling the book. So you can imagine that the real author went a little crazy when she discovered that her book not only was her sweet romance turned into not hard pornography, but just sort of naughty pornography. but it was her story. It was something she had created, and somebody went in and changed the point of view. Well, that's not writing. And so it was something that happens in this world, and it's happening more and more often because of the age of internet that you can self-publish, and not all people are ethical. Now, a real author, of course, was devastated, and she turned first to the perhaps the female author's biggest savior, chocolate. I think she ate a lot of chocolate. She gained a lot of weight, I think, over the course of several months in which she locked herself away and 20 pounds heavier. She finally realized that the chocolate wasn't going to do it. So she hired a lawyer, and there's a lawsuit going on now. So she's not in a position to be able to talk about the entire process that she's been going through. But I hope that once the lawsuit is finished, and I hope that she wins, she will come on the program and talk to us. Meanwhile, I believe she has gotten off of the chocolate and back onto the computer. But it is something that we have to take into consideration. As writers, you have to think about it. And someone said, well, oh, you always say, you know, you should get a lawyer because you're sponsored by a lawyer. And that's true. Larson & Larson are my sponsors. But Larson & Larson are my sponsors because I know what happens to writers, perhaps from personal experience that I can't talk about. What happens to you if you are not protected and if you are not ready to face the consequences of somebody stealing your work or signing a contract that you did not realize what you were giving up. I had Ace Atkins, a New York Times bestseller, on recently. And one of the things that I discovered, of course, was that he was also involved in a lawsuit. And this was a lawsuit in which he had signed a contract. So you sign a contract, and sometimes you don't realize that you're signing a contract that perhaps ties you to a certain publisher. And not just that, ties you to doing the type of books that they want. So in this case, you have to buy yourself out of a contract. Or even worse, and I recently had Clive Cussler on my program for his 85th birthday. Now, he's a fantastic author, and he knows all about, you know, the entire process of publishing. But he himself found himself in a major lawsuit in which he lost and was told to pay $10 million. And it was a very difficult time for him. But these things happen, and of course, most of us would not be involved in a $10 million lawsuit. We should be so lucky. But if you are involved even in a little lawsuit, you have to think about having a lawyer ready to step in and help you. And to understand that chocolate is not the cure to plagiarism, or chocolate is not the cure to having signed a bad contract. You have to be ready to know your legal rights. And so that's one of the reasons I have Bill Larson on the program once a month as our legal eagle to give us advice. So if you have a question for him, please send it to me at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And next week when he's in the studio, we can talk to him. And if you want to even call in at that time, we'd be happy to talk to you, because it's something that has to be always in the back of your mind. You know, writers have so much on their minds. You have all your story ideas in your mind. You have all your characters in your mind. You have all your research in your mind. And it's awful to have to also keep in the back of your mind, as far back as you dare do it, that there are legal implications. One for you also, that you don't want to ever be accused of stealing anything. So you have to be careful. And the other is that it's just nice to know somebody who's ready to help you when you need help. So next Thursday, I will have Bill Larson on, and send me your questions. And this brings me also to the thought about agents. When you are ready to get out there and find yourself an agent, before you sign any contract with an agent, which also then goes to a publishing house, you have to make sure that you know what you're signing. It's just something that has to be always in the back of your mind. I want you to think about some of the agents that I've spoken to, and you can listen to my interviews with them on my archive page. I have a very nice web page. It's radio-joyonpaper.com, and there's a large archive there. You can go there and you can look through the list, and you'll see which ones are agents. And listen to the agents and listen to what they're saying, because they always give really good advice to my listeners. They want you to succeed, and they want to always find new writers. And so sometimes it's difficult to know exactly what an agent wants. But if you listen to some of these interviews with some of the very, very best top agents in the world, like Irene Goodman, or let me think, who else? Just everyone. Lane Zachary, another fantastic agent. Her interview is fascinating because she was involved in one of the largest auctions of a book. And it's when you find an agent like that who's capable of taking you to not one publisher, but at one point she had four publishers, and it was an all-night auction as they went wild trying to get a book that she had found and she had discovered the author herself, and it was very exciting for her to be able to get a six-figure, almost seven-figure advance for this author, a new author. So it's an exciting process for an agent. So sometimes people will say, oh, well, I write to agents and they don't answer back, or they're not interested, or it's impossible to get an agent. But it's not true. You can find an agent. Sometimes it's a matter of time. Sometimes it's a matter of luck. But it's worth pursuing. If you think that you have a book that's going to be something that will, you know, go beyond the ordinary, it's worth trying to get an agent. And one of the things, if I mentioned Irene Goodman for a really good reason, she does a wonderful critique of for a writer. And when you're at a level where you think that you want to really pursue an agent sort of full speed ahead, it's a good idea to find someone who will critique your work and someone who is in the business and who really knows what the publishers are looking for. And on the first of the month, which is coming up pretty soon, Irene Goodman auctions off two critiques. You can go to her website. It's irenegoodman.com and make a bid. There are auctions, and all the proceedings go to her favorite charities to help the blind. And you will get something worth the money. The auctions range, it depends every month, the amount that's raised is different. But we're talking several hundred dollars, and in exchange you get a fantastic critique from her with not just ideas on your writing, but ideas on how to where you should market and to whom you should put your efforts towards meeting. So it's a very, very good critique. And that's irenegoodman.com. When you're talking about agents and when you're looking for agents, one of the things is, you can go to Publishers Marketing Place, and there they have all the agents listed, and they tell you there the details of what an agent is looking for. So I would suggest that you go there. One of the names you'd come up with if you're looking, for example, if you're young adult fiction, would be John Cusack. Now, John Cusack was on my program a while back, and you can listen to his interview on my archive page, and you'll find out that not only is he looking for, interesting young fiction, he's also looking for illustrators and for books that are illustrated, which is very unusual. He's a wonderful, wonderful person to contact. Now, I have to take a little break, and then when we come back, I want to talk to you a few more things before we go to the interview with Ridley Pearson.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back for a few minutes before Ridley Pearson gets on the line. He's going to be talking to us from the studios in New York City, where he is very, very happy to be promoting his latest international thriller. And I'm really excited to talk to him because I enjoy his books. And, you know, he's one of those special writers who loves to help other writers. He loves to encourage children to read and to write, and so it's going to be very exciting to talk to him. Now, before he gets on the line, I'm going to just go over a few things that I wanted to mention about writing. You know, everyone always asks me, well, how can I become a better writer? The whole process is, you know, sometimes you can write and write and write, and you don't see yourself getting better. But if you haven't taken the time to study and to analyze other writers and why they get better or why their work is so good or why they're bestsellers, you're not doing your job. You have to improve yourself by learning from others. And one of the books I interviewed the other day, Joseph Finder, I'm holding his book up to the camera if you're on podcast, because this is an amazing book, not because of the story itself. It's an intriguing story. It's about what happens to a Supreme Court justice who is framed for some salacious actions. But the real joy of this book is that it is so well written that you have to read it to analyze how did he do it. The language is simple. The story is that, you know, it's not an unusual story. We've seen this story before. But why and how does he manage to make this book so exciting? And part of it, if you read this book, is that he is very, very good at honing his words. As you go through the process, you say, "Well, why is this good? Why is this sentence good? Why does he build up so much action with so few words?" And it's a process, and I'm enjoying this process because the first time I read it for pure joy, as I always do. And the second time I read it, I'm reading it. Why? How does he manage to do this? Because I get a lot of books. I get so many books from publishers and so many thrillers and so many, you know, books that I read them and I just don't get into them. So I don't talk to these authors, because if I haven't been captured by the author, if the whole thing, the process isn't working, then I'm, why would I want to interview the author? So this is why it's so much fun to take a book that really moves the story along and try to analyze it. And I'm reading it now for the third time because I want to know how he did it. It's really very, very well done. And that there's another book, if you're looking for summer reading, I would recommend that you read Guilty Minds by Joseph Finder. And another book is Delia Ephron's Syracusa. Syracusa is also a very well-written book. And if you want to look at how sentences should be constructed, and this is a complicated book because it's about two couples who go to Italy, and there's a lot of tension. And that's one of the beautiful things about this book, how she builds the tension and how she creates through four different points of view a story that really grabs you. It never stops moving. And it's the kind of book that you sort of, you read and then you don't want to put it down. You carry it along with you to the next room or to wherever you're going. Or even I found myself taking it to the car, and I never take books to the car with me. But I wanted to, you know, if I stopped for coffee somewhere, I was going to continue reading it. So this is one of the wonderful things, being a writer, is that there's a lot of growth that you can do. And so I would highly recommend both of those books for good summer reading, quick summer reading. And I think you'll find yourself at the end, after you analyze it perhaps for the third or fourth time, you'll start honing yourself. You'll say, whoa, I can do so much with this sentence. I can tighten it up. I can rewrite it. And try to capture that same talent that these two writers have. And so it's just a fun process, and it's a learning process. And I just love to do it. So again, I'd highly recommend that. And another book that I think, if you really want something fun to read, is The Risen. Risen just came out you can get it now in Redbox, and it's out there to watch. And so it's really nice to grab this book, which was written by Angela Hunt, based on the movie, which is a special talent to be able to take a movie and write the book afterward. And I think she's done a terrific job. As a matter of fact, I like the book even better than the movie. And it's a wonderful, part of the analyzing what makes a good writer and what makes a good story is to take something like that. Here you have the movie, and then you have the book, and you can sort of watch one and read one at the same time, and it's lots of fun. So I'm just waiting now. I think Ridley is calling in, and this is exciting for me. So we're going to play a little music here, and let's go straight to Ridley. Okay, I think Big Ed in the control room is getting thing locked up here so that we can move on to Ridley, who's he's just a fascinating writer, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. So we're going to play a little music, bumper music here. Okay. Okay, we're not going to play any music, but we have Ridley here. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, great. Well, I'm so excited to talk to you. And, you know, it's so funny. One of the things is not many interviews start by asking, you know, you have the Peter Pan quality in you, I think. And, you know, it's so great to be able to talk to you on this exciting time, for you have a new release, and it's just always so exciting when a book has just come out. But before I go into the book, I have to, because otherwise I save it to the end of the interview, and then I say, why didn't I ask him in the first place? Tell us the name of your kids.
My kids.
Yes.
You're funny. Yes. So I have a a 19-year-old in college, and I have an 18-year-old who's a senior in high school, and they're both daughters, and the older is Paige, and I'm an author,
uh-huh.
and the younger is Story.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Had we had a third, had we ever had a boy, we were going to name him Penn.
Wow.
You know, my poor kids, they suffer from dad's insanity.
I think it's absolutely adorable, and it shows that Peter Pan quality in you, which, of course, is very relevant in your life because you did something so amazing with Peter Pan. But before we get to that, I have to talk, of course, about the new book called White Bone. And it's the latest in your, you know, international thrillers. And it's a wonderful book. It's have your two American freelance operatives, John Knox and I love your character, the Chinese forensic accountant, Grace Chu. So tell us a little bit about White Bone.
Yeah, so White Bone is about the poaching of elephant tusk in Kenya. And we follow, as you say, two principal characters who have showed up in some books before, although this book stands alone. One of them is Grace Chu, a forensics accountant who is exploring some missing money in Africa, in Kenya, and she ends up being dumped into the African bush so that she will die of natural causes. And the other character is John Knox, who is an ex-private contractor in the Middle East, an American who drove trucks to resupply our troops. And he's worked with Grace before, and when she goes missing, he runs to Kenya to try to figure out the web of investigation she's left behind so that he might catch up to her and find her. So there's sort of an A story and a B story, and we go back and forth all the way through. I did go over to Kenya to do research for the novel, and I'm an Eagle Scout, so among the research, when I was out with a Maasai tribesman one day, I said, you know, I'm an Eagle Scout, so I've been trained in survival. How long would I make it in the African bush?
Uh-huh.
And he said, less than 24 hours. And I said, no, you misunderstand. I mean, I really do know a great deal about survival. And he said, sir, you wouldn't last 24 hours. And I knew I was going to put Grace into the bush. And I said, well, I need to last 4 days. So can you teach me how you survive in the bush? And we spent the next several days digging up roots and scratching trees and looking at bark. And he taught me how to survive in the African wild. And I throw Grace into that in White Bone.
And it is exciting. Wow. You know, and very realistic. And now we know why.
Well, good, because what you're reading in there was the advice I got. So that's good.
Well, as you said, both of my boys are Eagle Scouts, and but nothing quite prepares them for the African adventure that you put there.
Yes, I was shocked I think he was right. I don't think I would have made it
alone
overnight, literally overnight, because one of the first things you have to do is abandon your clothing, and I would never have thought to do that. But that human smell is what you have to get rid of. So you quickly ditch all your clothes and bury them or burn them, and you smear yourself with mud and with animal dung. And if you're lucky, you get rid of your scent and at least have a fighting chance. But that would never have occurred to me.
very many people, that's for sure. But you have woven, again here, a wonderful story. As you said, you've had these same characters in some of your other books. And I get a kick out of Grace Chu. I think she was wonderful.
Thank you. She's my favorite character for whatever reason. I actually taught creative writing in English in China in 2008 at the college level. And I had mostly young women. They were third year in college. And they were simply amazing young women, very ambitious, very smart. And so I took about five of them and made the character of Grace Chu out of them. So I feel I know Grace very, very well, and I just love writing her.
Well, she does. She comes across as, and it's, I just think it's so clever because it's not a character that you expect. And So if somebody who's, you know, as you said, you can read your books as standalone. You don't have to have read, you know, the entire series. But it is really fantastic. I think a wonderful character. Now, in this book, of course, Whitebone, it's such a tragedy what they are doing to the elephants. It's just, it's mind-boggling almost.
I try to put a social issue underneath my crime thrillers so that you learn something as well as, you know, have a fast airplane read. And in this case, I heard that if I had grandchildren, which I don't yet, that they would not see an African elephant in the wild in Africa, only in reserves. And I kind of didn't believe it, and I dug into it a little bit. And in 1979, there were 1,200,000 wild elephants in sub-Saharan Africa, and there are currently fewer than 400,000. We're losing 100 a day to poaching, 30,000 a year, and in 9 years, there won't be any left. And it seems, I mean, Africa is the elephant. It seems impossible to me that as human beings we would allow this to happen and, in fact, cause it to happen, because it's humans killing the elephants for their ivory to sell to the burgeoning middle class in China. And it's a crime against all of humanity. And I hope I've woven a fun story around that, so by the end of it, you want to send $10 to a worthy nonprofit in Africa and try to stop this.
And you're doing much more than $10. I understand you're giving a large portion of your royalties to this.
Yeah, well, I've dedicated 20% of the royalties should the book get into a royalty payment situation or sell a movie, because I've seen what they do there now that I've traveled there and researched it. And in the last 2 years, the nonprofits in Kenya have been able to stem the poaching by nearly 80%, in part because the government has gotten behind it now. The government, I don't know if you remember, in April of this year, the government had the largest burn of ivory. What they do is they collect the ivory that they've recovered, and to show us all that they stand behind not doing this, they burn all this valuable ivory. So they burned something like $170 million worth of ivory. That received over a billion hits on Twitter. So they're beginning to make us all aware of this tragedy. And by doing that, people send money to the nonprofits in Kenya, and they've begun to save the elephant. But it needs to happen all across Africa, and it needs to happen right now.
So most of this ivory is sold to China?
Yes, almost entirely. What happened is, with the incredible economy in China, and I lived over there for a year teaching, as I said earlier, there's just a burgeoning middle class, and they buy Lexuses for twice the value because of the tariffs. They buy Porsches. They build large homes. But the ultimate sign of affluence in China, dating back thousands of years, I mean, you can't blame the Chinese, is an elegantly engraved piece of ivory tusk, elephant tusk. And it's like the ultimate status symbol. And they sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so the demand for ivory, beginning about, well, what's it been now, 18, 20 years that the Chinese middle class have been on the rise, that demand for ivory has shot to where the end ivory product in China used to be worth between $1 and $2,000, and those are sold now for $800,000. So there's this giant demand for ivory, including as a means for terrorists to raise money for their terrorism. So it's a very involved, multi-layered problem that I try to get to the heart of in White Bone. And certainly the elephant tusk is going to China, and the rhino horn is going to Vietnam.
Well, you know, I tried to think what we can do, and I want to encourage everyone to get your book. White Bone is a really exciting read. And to know that 20% of the royalties are going to go to a good cause, and also, and I'm sure it's a perfect book to be picked up for a film, because it just the adventures of Grace in you know, I think will be exciting.
Yeah. I hope so. It you know, the film world's a different world, but there does seem to be a bunch of interest, so we'll see.
But then I think what we have to do is, maybe you can write a book about, we can convince the Chinese that having ivory is really bad luck. And
there you go.
Then if they...
And, you know, to their credit, the Chinese government understands the problem. And they have made it illegal, which it wasn't even a few years ago. They've made it illegal to import ivory, but of course it continues on a black market. And they're working hard on this, too. They've done a few ivory burns as well to sort of raise awareness that if we keep doing this, there won't be any ivory. But it's an ongoing challenge, and, you know, when there's that kind of demand, people will supply. And what White Bone explores is, you know, the poaching of elephant, and which is just, it's just disgraceful what they do to these beasts. And the fact that, you know, there are ways to stop it, and if we don't, we're in big trouble.
Yeah, it's so sad, because they're so beautiful. It's mind-boggling that somebody would want to kill one. It's
unbelievable. They're beautiful. They're brilliant. I mean, they're an incredible.
And they're so loving. They're so loving of their.
Yeah, they have a matriarchal society. So if you kill the mother, as they are doing, then the underlings don't know how to build the society that their mother and grandmothers had built. It's really disruptive. And then you start losing elephants because they don't even know what they're doing out there. I mean, it's a you know, it's a vicious cycle, and it can be stopped. I mean, as has been seen in Kenya, it can be stopped, and we're going to stop it. And hopefully, White Bone, you know, not only educates you, but gives you a fun airplane read while you're learning about it.
Well, it is a fun read, that's for sure. Well, all of your books are fun read. One of the reasons I was really excited to interview you is because I know that you have a particular joy of writing books for children and getting children involved in reading. And
yes.
And both of my boys were like avid readers. They started reading when they were, you know, well, I think before they could walk almost. And they just loved reading, always having a book. And so that you've written a wonderful series called The Kingdom Keepers. Of course, it's for children, but I think it's for everybody, because they're really exciting stories.
Well, I was so lucky. I mean, I was asked by Disney to write an exciting story set inside their theme parks, and I explained that with my crime novels, the way I hope to make them very readable is that I put as much fact in them as I can. And so if I was going to write a story inside their theme parks, they would have to let me into their theme parks at all hours.
Ooh.
And they sort of recoiled, and they said, "What? No, we don't do that." And I said, "Well, you know, that's the way I write. I try to put a lot of fact in my fiction." And they called back and said, "Okay." So now I've been inside their theme parks 30 times when the park is closed, and shown around by the people who actually built the attractions. And I walk the attractions when they're dark and take notes, and then they turn the attraction on for me at 5, 6, 7 in the morning.
Oh,
and I
wow.
ride them a dozen times.
Ooh, how exciting.
I've written a series called The Kingdom Keepers that puts five kids into that same situation. They get inside the park after dark, and the rides are coming alive, and the people are coming alive, and the villains are coming alive, and it's just been so much fun. So in another one of those, the third in the Return series of The Kingdom Keepers, comes out in March.
Well, they are exciting books. I hope you'll come on and talk about them in March. As a matter of fact, maybe what I'll do is I'll bring a couple of kids into the studio with me, and they can...
Oh, fun!
Would that be nice?
Oh, that would be fun. Each year I volunteer teach at a middle school in St. Louis where I live. And I teach creative writing and have so much fun with the kids. I just can't get enough of that, you know, that sort of wide-eyed eagerness to learn. It's really, really fun.
Well, I'm gonna find a couple of kids who my it's a little too late for my son in Vanderbilt is studying biomedical engineering, although he loves the Kingdom Keepers. But it'd be a thrill to have some kids in the studio with me and to talk to you about this, the latest books, because, you know, it is all kids' dream just to be in Disney Park at night and to be able to run around. And, oh, my goodness, if I could get on Splash Mountain and do that four or five times in a row.
Oh, my gosh. It took me about 2 hours to walk Splash Mountain when the water was turned off.
Oh.
When they turn it on, 5,000 gallons a minute passes through that ride. But I walked it when it was dry. And I walked it with a guy with white hair who knew more about Disney World and Magic Kingdom in Disney World than anyone I'd met. He'd worked in and around the park for 35 years. He had once met Walt Disney. And I had a character in that first book named Fred. And I read his little name badge and I said, you know, I've got this character that's an awful lot like you, only you're better. Could I put you in the book? And he said, oh, I'd be honored. So I named a character Wayne in the book. And for the next 10 years, when kids went on to Splash Mountain, they would see this guy's name tag, and they would see his white hair and say, wait a second, are you the Wayne from Kingdom Keepers? And he'd say, heck yes. And he would carry a Sharpie, and he would sign their maps. He retired last year, but it was so much fun because I would get these emails from kids saying, I met Wayne from the Kingdom Keepers.
Well, we can hear the joy in your voice, which is why I think of you as a Peter Pan. And of course, Peter Pan is very important to you because you wrote Peter and the Starcatcher, which
yeah, with Dave Barry.
And of course, as a play on Broadway, I think you had more nominations for Tonys than any. It was amazing.
Yeah, more nominations for Tonys than any play, and then we won 5. It was written by the brilliant Rick Ellis, who did Jersey Boys, based on the book that Dave and I wrote. And it's still out there touring. It was the second most produced play in America last year.
Wow.
Quite an honor.
Wow. So Peter Pan was always with you as a kid. You loved it?
Well, you know, it was, again, I try to, you know, get my ideas from real life. And I was, years and years ago, I was reading Peter Pan to our oldest daughter, Paige. And she put her hand across the book, maybe 5 pages in, and said, Dad, how did Peter meet Captain Hook in the first place? And I went, oh, my gosh, that's its own story. That's its own book. And Daddy's going to write the book. And Dave Barry and I wrote the book. And to our surprise, it became giantly popular, and we wrote 4 more in that series, 10 books altogether as writing partners. And, you know, we try to answer how a young boy became the iconic Peter Pan.
And they are exciting stories, too. So, yeah, oh, wow. This wonderful for Paige. She can go around and say that she's the inspiration for this.
That's right. She gets a big kick out of it when I say, yeah, and my daughter Paige, and she sort of beams.
And she gets a big
She ended up.
She gets a big royalty from Daddy, huh?
Early draft. Well, she gets to go to college. That's the royalty.
That's a royalty from Daddy.
That's why I'm writing 2 books a year. I'll tell you, Patsy, that's a challenge.
Yeah, well, it is. That's so fantastic. Yeah. I just get such a kick out of you because I know how much you do really enjoy bringing children to the written word, and you have found that joy on paper that I talk to all of the authors I interview, and one of the things that I interview quite a few young authors who are just starting off, and as a matter of fact, I've sort of adopted one lovely young girl named Kanisha, and because she is writing sci-fi, she's just starting off, and I know she's got, you know, fantastic talent, and I so love to help them find that joy that you
Absolutely.
Get. And it's, you know, we hear
Absolutely.
It in your voice, just talking about your work, how much fun it is.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I do endless work. Every book goes through at least 4 full revisions before it's published. So it's just, you know, millions and millions of hours into these things. But it's totally worth it. And seeing that smile on a kid's face or running into somebody in the airport who's read a book like White Bone and says, you know, I didn't have any idea about the elephant problem until I read this book. Thanks for writing the book. That's what makes it all worth it. So it's a really rewarding career. I have the best job out there.
And, well, of course, you are so talented. I can't mention all of the awards and all of your things that you've done, but just to know that you have written, I don't know how many books now, I don't even have that number, but a lot. And
A lot.
And it's just that all this writing has brought so much joy to your life and so much joy to other people.
Well, it's kind of you to say. I hope so. It sure has to mine. And, you know, I hope a book like White Bone not only entertains but informs. That's my mission, is to raise some awareness while having a good time.
And, you know, what is your advice? I ask this of writers often, but what is your best advice for new writers who are just starting off and don't know what to do?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things. One is there's a brilliant book called A Writer's Journey by a guy named Christopher Vogler. And it explains what the Greeks knew, which is that a strong story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And when you tell that to middle grade kids, they all kind of roll their eyes because it sounds so simple. It's very, very hard. And I think it's the trickiest part of storytelling, is to make sure that you sort of obey some loose rules that revolve around a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you do that, you write a very satisfying story. So I encourage new writers to make sure, if they don't outline, and not everybody does, but to at least have imagined and sat and thought about a beginning, a middle, and an end. You may not end up with the end you thought you had, but that's okay. You have some place to aim for, and if you write without aiming for things, you end up quitting in the middle. You lose track of what you're doing, and you say, why did I ever start this thing, and you give up. So I encourage beginning, middle, and end, and that book, Writer's Journey, and I encourage setting aside a certain amount of time, whether it be a half hour or an hour a day or a week or a certain day every week, and dedicate that to your writing, and don't text and don't go on Facebook and don't tweet. Just sit there and think and write. And if you do that, you begin to get better as a writer. And it's all about a process. I mean, it took me 8.5 years of writing 6 hours a day before I ever got published. The first thing you write doesn't get published. It's an art form, and it takes you a long time to figure it out and get better at it. But it's so much fun, the process itself, that, you know, you want to get into it and enjoy it and live it and love it. And if you do, the reader will too.
Oh, wow. Fantastic advice. And Ridley Pearson, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And it's just been absolute joy for me to talk to you, and to encourage all of my listeners to go out and buy White Bone. It's just come out, and it's a fantastic read. As you said, a lot of people can find it at the airport, but it's online, and you can buy it at all the major bookstores. And it's a great, great summer read. So, Ridley, thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to you coming back when you have the next edition of Kingdom Keepers. And we'll talk
Thanks,
more.
Patsy.
Okay.
Thanks, Patsy. We'll see you in March.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Bye. Wow. That was really nice. I really, really like this guy. He's, you know, again, when you're looking for a good read, Ridley's books are always, always exciting. And if you have any young kids in your life, do get the Kingdom Keepers. You can start at the beginning or anywhere in between. And the books are inspiring for kids because, it, you know, now with all this Pokemon Go idea of characters, and I'm probably they'll turn the Kingdom Keepers into a Pokemon Go because it would play very well. But it's just a way to get kids into reading. And when they start reading, they start imagining, and so it's all part of a process. And Ridley Pearson is just a great writer. And we also have a lot of great writers here, right here in Florida. And So if you are interested in a good book, go to the new Book Nook, Miami Avenue Book Nook, which is located in Indian Rocks Beach. And they're going to have a grand opening in August, which we will be announcing. And meanwhile, of course, we're getting ready here for some more exciting adventure with Barnes & Noble. Check out the Barnes & Noble webpage. They have so many things coming up, so many events. And, of course, part of it is around the J.K. Rowling's latest release. Again, one of the wonderful ways, if you have any young people in your life, to get them reading. And once they start reading J.K. Rowling's or Ridley Pearson, they will be hooked for life and they will become readers. And so it's just a wonderful opportunity to go down to Barnes & Noble and pick up a new book, whether it's Ridley's book or the J.K. Rowling's thing, which of course is going to be an exciting two or three days. They have all sorts of events, which you can see on their webpage. And also pick up perhaps Risen, which is by our local author, Angela Hunt. And her books are going to be available at the Book Nook at Indian Rocks Beach. And again, when you're looking for a book to read, another one is The Guilty Minds by Joseph Finder. So have a good time. Have a good weekend. It's always something that I try to tell everyone, that, you know, you don't know what life is going to bring you. And you have to just always try to find the joy in life, and whether it's through a good book or whether it's through meeting new friends for example, go to Miami Avenue this weekend and meet the owner, Bev Malley, every weekend, Friday and Saturday night. They have live music. And Bev is standing at the door and waiting to greet you with a big smile. And they have fantastic Florida wines and fantastic music. And it's just a wonderful place to go and to have fun. And in the end, that's the most important thing in the world, to find joy and to share it and to have some fun. Because you never know what life is going to bring you. So put a smile on your face and take yourself down to Miami Avenue sometime this weekend and enjoy yourself. So, and remember, next weekend, not next week, next Thursday, I have the Legal Eagle, Bill Larson, on. And if you have any questions, send me an email at radio, patsy.radio@gmail.com, and our Legal Eagle will answer those questions. And meanwhile, just keep writing and enjoy your process of learning how to get better every day. Bye-bye for now.